Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. This is our super-duper special Citizens for Health radio show with a gentleman friend of ours. His name is Jim Turner. He's an attorney over in Washington, D.C., runs an organization with a website called citizens.org. And for all those people that are listening in, making sure you're listening to the show, today's date is March 12th, 2021. Holy cow. Time is flying, and they're going to be adjusting the times later tonight for all those people on daylight savings time. Over this weekend for daylight savings time, which is always my favorite time of the year. I like it when it's lighter longer. And having said all those things, Jim Turner has been an attorney with Citizens for Health for a really long time. And I know we've done a ton of these radio shows where you can hear a little bit about his background, but he's been doing this for decades. With Citizens for Health, they started in 1993. I remember that part. Jim was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, and he wrote a book called Chemical Feast, and he's a really good guy. You can listen to any one of the previous radio shows to hear wonderful, I say this really sincerely, wonderful explanations about whatever topic Jim Turner is talking about, because many times he's able to give us the history and a lot more of the insight than most people would know about. So I've learned so much about so many things as far as being the host here, because I'm listening in as well. I get a chance to ask some questions. And if Jim sounds a little bit different on this radio show, it's because he's in the car and he's driving. I really appreciate his commitment towards being here, but we're going to keep it kind of shorter than some other times, only because we want to make sure he arrives at his destination safely. So having said that, Mr. Jim Turner, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you a lot, Peter. I'm actually parked at the moment, and I'm going to remain parked as long as I can. But anyway, yeah, I'm here, and we're in Maryland at this point. This is about the fifth time I've been out of the District of Columbia since March 11th of 2020. It's interesting. We know we're 2 days into the second year of our COVID stuff, and everybody's hanging on, trying to figure out if we're going to be able to break out of the whole thing over the next few months and see what happens. So I will be very careful when I do start driving, but that won't be for a while. Maybe the show will be done by the time I drive.
Okay. Well, in reference to, like, when they started locking things down, I remember the first time that I heard anything about people working from home, it was like from Silicon Valley, and I think it was either Apple or Microsoft, or one of those companies says, you guys can start working remotely. And I'm like, whoa, this is weird. A huge company telling their people that they don't have to come into their huge office or offices or office complex. So that was the beginning of the beginning, and here we are today, and it's stranger than it's ever been. Although I was a little bit more fearful because I didn't know what to expect, because, you know, there was rumors about, a bioweapon, and nobody really knew what was going on, and there was a lot of hysteria and people kind of freaking out, and then severe lockdowns, and I really wasn't sure. I wasn't really sure. I was planning for the worst, hoping for less than that, and I think we got that. I think we didn't get the worst, but we're still not out of it, and we're still kind of trying to figure this stuff out. We're going to talk about some of those things as a result of this radio show. So I remember that was my thought process, Jim. Let's hear your thought process as we go nostalgia, like a year ago.
Yeah, let me ask you, when what time frame are you saying that you heard about Apple saying you can work from home?
I don't remember when it was, but it was before everybody else started working from home, before the lockdown.
This was in conjunction with COVID?
Yes. Yeah, it was like January, January.
I'm asking you that I'm asking you that because I want to make a generic point. Many of the things that we are seeing, like working from home, that are being attributed to COVID, actually COVID-19 merely accelerated trends that were already underway. So, for example, there's a law firm that I work with, and it's actually based in San Diego. I think it was San Diego, might have been San Francisco, but anyway, it's based out west. But I've been working with the lawyers that I work with there from home for 10 years. And when I say home, the lawyer I work with now has been in San Diego, then in Colorado, then in Israel, Haifa, Israel. Same lawyer working for the same firm, now in Haifa for the last 5 or 6 years. And what I'm saying is that trend of working from home was already beginning to develop in many, many places. Of course, from your program, you know about home-based businesses. They've been out there for a long time. But I'm saying that this idea that we're going to, say, work from a law firm like this or work from Apple, I wanted to mention that there's several law firms in New York who started moving people out of the office a few years ago, massively out of the office once COVID-19 hit. No lawyers working. Right now, the iconoclastic old lawyer guy is the only one going into the office of this several hundred lawyer firm office. Everyone else is working from home. That's a lawyer. All of the staffers, the people that do all of the communications and the clerking and the putting together the pieces of papers are working in the office. But the offices, like that one in San Diego and the one here, have all reduced their rents. They've reduced their office space. We're in the midst of a huge social upheaval, which I say was going on prior to COVID-19, and COVID-19 exacerbated it. And here's the most interesting one. We started back in the early 90s, right around the time Citizens got started, Citizens for Health, and we were working with something called the Home Health Movement. And it had a set of priorities here in Washington. They wanted to get visiting nurses to be funded by Medicare. They wanted to have home companions that would come in and do meals. They had a whole bunch of things they had going, including putting hospital services in the home for people. But it was a small business. Once COVID hit, it got to be a big business. And you can now, in your home today, you can order an entire hospital room, an actual room, and put it in your house with a hospital bed, with a monitor, with a intravenous feeding tube, the bag that hangs through. All of that can be in a room in your house. You have it there for 6 weeks, 9 weeks, whatever. Do the recovery and leave. That movement actually was underway prior to COVID-19, but took on tremendous force when the hospital rooms were so overtaxed that they had to get people out of the hospital really rapidly. So many people who are chronically ill people went to their homes and put the hospital bed in the homes, and then people came and visited them. So again, that was a movement that was there kind of below the horizon until COVID-19 came along. And there are other things about working out of the home that seem to be taking on momentum at this point, and particularly if you start looking at Zoom and see what's happened to Zoom, if you want to look at retail stores. I mean, retail stores are, like here, I'm in Maryland right now, 40% of all of the independently owned restaurants in Maryland will never reopen after COVID. Now, my point there is not so much – I mean, my point is that we've been doing a lot of home delivery of food prior to COVID. It's a huge business right now. Actually, before COVID and, naturally, about 35% of all meals were eaten in the home, two-thirds out. I think that's right. I might have it backwards. But in any case, the number of things that are now eaten at home has gone way up because of home delivery of food, which was starting to take place before COVID. I mean, we used to work late at night at the office, and we started to learn that you could call many different restaurants. Then there were the Uber delivery things. Those were all going on before COVID, but got a tremendous boost from COVID. And then, of course, there's Amazon, which was pressuring retail, has been pressuring retail people since the early 90s, and has now just exploded massively with sales coming, which are bypassing the work out of the home centers, retail centers. Trouble on the job front, trouble on all kinds of fronts there, but great for Amazon, and people just love to get those, you know, it's like getting up at Christmas every morning when there's these packages showing up. So anyway, I'm just saying, lots of home stuff going on. I believe the extension of trends that had already started, and I think that's a very important part of what we're dealing with. We're in a huge, huge, massive shift of the way the society has been organized, and I don't believe the concept going back is a real concept. I don't think we're going to go back to the way it was before. That's my rip.
And the Apple or Microsoft, whichever company was the one that was, or Google, whichever one was over in that West Coast, pulling people back in, did it specifically because of the virus. They just didn't want people to be working from home. So that was like, I'm thinking, I don't remember my time frame, but it was either February or early March. It was before the big stuff started happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Incidentally, this shift, it's a major shift in every aspect of our living situation, and you know, people are learning how to live with that. People are spending are reevaluating the way they spend their time. And I can tell you that prior to COVID, the homeschooling movement was very vibrant and operating. I mean, big, and had organizations and so forth. They've gotten huge numbers of folks going into the homeschooling movement now as a result of COVID. But it was there before.
Absolutely. And that's going to be very interesting because it has so many different – it touches everything, so in different ways. So for good or bad, I guess we might as well talk a little bit about what's going on with the vaccines, because that'll swing into this. You know, I remember when they were really pushing, before the vaccines of today, they were really pushing for school kids to make sure they got all their vaccinations, otherwise they couldn't go to school. So there was this kind of like frantic thing, I'm guessing, that there was a lot of parents who were trying to figure out how in the world are we going to be able to homeschool these kids if we don't want them to get the vaccine. So there's a small minority of people that were then thrust into that situation. Well, now almost everybody is trying to figure out how to work from home. And that whole issue of the vaccination thing with their kids is far less of an issue, because if someone says, well, you know, you can't have your kids go to school, they're like, well, who the hell cares? They're not going to school now. They're not getting the education that they need right now from the public school. So I can see a whole bunch of people moving into that homeschooling movement as a result of that. So the interesting thing is this is putting the economy and our society in a blender and turning it on a high speed and keeping the top off. So it's flying all over the place.
Well, actually, they keep trying to put the top on and it keeps blowing off, and they keep trying to put it on and it keeps blowing off. I actually think that the COVID dynamic is a breakout dynamic. I think people have been constrained in all kinds of ways, and they've been picking away at trying to figure their ways to make their own choices. Biochemical individuality drives everybody. The society can say that's not the case. The authorities can say that's not the case. They can pass laws and say that's not the case. But in fact, people are constantly looking for ways to express their own self, their own health, their own well-being, and they work at it. And the COVID thing has just blown the top off of controlling everybody, and they're trying everything, man. The Israelis, it's fascinating. The Israelis have started a movement toward what they're calling the green passport, and there are movements all around saying you can't fly on airplanes, you can't shop in stores, you can't go to sports events unless you've got this piece of paper that says you're a good person, and that good person requires being vaccinated. I'm here to tell you that the authorities can move in any direction they like on that front. That is going to be a sore point forever as long as they try to do that. Just to give you an example, Israel seems to have inoculated, at least they claim they have, about 90% of their population, and they're trying to squeeze the other 10%. And simultaneously, they have bought a full load of vaccines from Pfizer so that they can re-inoculate that entire population in 6 months. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that the powers that be are just as nervous as everybody else is about whether this thing is actually going to go away or going to work or whatever. And the people who are making the vaccines, Pfizer got a $64 billion bailout in the previous bill, not this bill, but the previous one that was done under Trump, $64 billion a direct payment to Pfizer. This kind of stuff is it's a very interesting early warning dynamic about what's going to go on. My sense of politics, I got to Washington essentially permanently starting in 68 working with Nader. Watched this over and over. Watched it on organic food. Watched it on acupuncture needles. Watched it on nutrition labeling. Watched it on the swine flu campaign in 76. It's a pattern. It's a template. And basically what happens is somebody blows a bugle and they say, run in this direction, run in this direction. And then they come and they give you horses and guns and stuff and they say, run in this direction, give us the money, we'll give you the stuff. And then they do it. That's not to say that they're completely wrong or even totally wrong. Maybe we have to run in that direction. But what we do have is no organized system to make it easy to understand what the right choices are in these situations. So we're doing a vaccine for everyone policy, our position at Citizens for Health is very simple. Anyone that wants a vaccine should have a vaccine, and there are people being deprived of vaccines because they're being stored in refrigerators at remarkably low degrees, and they're being saved for proper people, and there's cutting in line. All that stuff is going on. So all the politics that we see everywhere else is going on for people that want the vaccine. Simultaneously, we say that anybody that doesn't want a vaccine should not be required to take one, either by law or by social force, unless it goes through the legal process that evaluates when it is proper to take somebody's fundamental human rights away. It is a fundamental human right not to be vaccinated, and that can only be violated by due process of law, which does a very serious analysis of the risks and benefits of taking that right away. And that's not been done. There's no intention on the part of the government or the manufacturers to do that. And so there's all kinds of extra legal, extra correct process going on to force people to take vaccines. And I want to be very clear, if people want to take a vaccine, they should have access to a vaccine, and it's being withheld from people who want it. On the other hand, people who don't want a vaccine should be allowed to say, we don't want a vaccine unless and until there is a demonstrated, evaluated, looked at fact under the law that we have to take away people's rights in order to save, to have a larger benefit for society. Right now, we've got three vaccines on the market, none of which have gone through the regulatory process for approving their safety and efficacy. They are all on the market as emergency efforts because we have been told that this thing is the worst thing that has ever possibly happened. And yet yesterday or 2 days ago, Fauci was on TV saying, when I said this is going to get worse, he said there were 27 deaths on March 19th last year. And he said, this is going to get a lot worse. He said, never in my imagination did I think we would have 558,000 dead people as a result of this. And then he was asked why it happened, and he said, because it was handled badly politically. I'm here to tell you, a political process maximizes the amount of choice that people can have. It does not minimize it. And it maximizes the amount of information people can have so that they can make intelligent choices. It doesn't minimize it. We are in a situation where they minimize the information, they narrow the choices. Fauci, for example, takes high doses of vitamin C and D every day. Why? Because it builds up your immunity. Everybody who has been involved in the in the Vaccine Plus movement knows DNC is extremely important. It's not part of our national policy. How come? Why doesn't everybody in the country know that high doses of C and D are really important at this time and probably always? Well, bad policy making, bad information flow, and we have not unified the population in understanding how the number one line of defense against something like COVID is building up your own self, building up your own innate biological capabilities, your individual biochemistry, your individual sense. 75% of the people who are coming down with COVID have high blood pressure. Now, what causes those people to be sick and to die? Is it the COVID or the high blood pressure? Well, obviously, it's a combination. Why would we single out one piece of a combination and pour massive amounts of social energy into that one piece and almost completely hide the rest of it? That's the kind of thing I think we need to think about, and that's where Citizens for Health that's where Citizens for Health focuses its attention. So that's my rant for that issue.
There you go. Well, I have just some concerns about a few things that you said, just not that you said it, but the things that you said. Meaning Fauci comes out and says there's 520,000 deaths. I really question that 520,000 number. So because, I'll just use as an example, there was just recently a 39-year-old, otherwise seemingly healthy Utah woman with a 9-year-old child who died 4 days after getting the shot, her second shot. And it was the Moderna one. And they are fighting, they meaning the establishment, to make sure that no one could ever say that this has anything related to a vaccine. So her death will never, ever, ever be attributed. And even the medical examiner said, listen, we can do the autopsy, but unless she died like immediately after getting the shot, we can't ultimately prove that it was the shot that did it. So they'll fight for that one. Like, nope, this wasn't a vaccine death. But everything that they could possibly have lumped into a COVID death is now a COVID death. So I don't know what the real number is, but I don't know what the real number is. Is it more than 520,000? Is it less than 520,000? Where are the flu numbers associated with that? Just trying to do any kind of intellectual calculations here are impossible when you know you're being deceived or you know you're given false information. So it's either false information or deceptive information. I believe it's probably a combination of both depending on who's giving it. But the reality is that we don't know. And those are some of the real issues that I have.
Let me jump in and say I believe it is a fact that we don't know. I would suggest that the third possibility exists, and that is that we just have a very, very rudimentary way of even thinking about this problem. So you used two words there that I think are crucial. One is caused, and the other is proof. Now, in our society, almost all decisions that are made by as policy decisions turn on the burden of proof. And so the burden of proof is, in our system, if you have the burden of proof, you say, prove to me that COVID caused this death. It will be impossible for you to do that because you can't come up and carry that burden because they will consistently raise more questions. You cannot prove that COVID caused that death. On the other hand, if you say, prove to me that the vaccine caused that death, you'll have the same problem. Now, if you turn around and you say, the COVID-19 deaths that are out there, I think it's 558,000, I think, but whatever the number is that are out there, the question now becomes caused. What caused that death? Well, the vast majority of those have underlying health conditions. Prior to COVID-19 showing up, they would have said this person died of heart disease or overweight. You know, you look right now and they're saying, and there's a big study out that says countries that have a higher overweight category, more people die of COVID. Well, COVID's now the cause, whereas before, overweight would have been the cause. And they had a huge, massive public health campaign against overweight. But COVID came along, and now they can say, oh, COVID did it, even though it's clear that if you are in an overweight country, you're more likely to die of COVID. Or take another one where we know people are very sick when they are in below the poverty line. That population is a very unhealthy population. And now what they're saying is COVID has a bigger impact on the population that is poor than on the general population. So why is that a COVID issue? Why do we say COVID caused that problem rather than poverty caused that problem? There's a whole lot of money in selling vaccines, and that biases our thinking tremendously. And it's really a tragedy because most of the people working on the COVID issue on all sides are well-intended. They want to do the best. The individuals want to get the best for themselves. The frontliners want to do the best for everyone. The doctors want to do the best. I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of people that work for pharma want to do the best. But a way of thinking has emerged that says there is a single cause for every effect. And that is a tragedy because there are very, very few things for which there is a single cause. And so if you wanted to, say, eliminate, if 75% of the COVID deaths happen in people who have high blood pressure, I suggest to you that a massive national campaign lowering blood pressure effectively would, in fact, lower COVID deaths. That's not the way it's being presented to the public to think about. The public is being told, get the vaccine and you'll be fine. That's not true. We don't know yet. We do not know yet whether getting the vaccine stops the actual ability of that individual to spread the virus, whatever that thing is, whatever COVID-19 is. We do not know whether a person who's gotten vaccinated will now be someone who will not spread COVID-19. We know that their symptoms, at least we appear to know that their symptoms will be less, but maybe the lower symptoms are just putting them in the category of people who spread the disease when they have no symptoms. There's a whole big category of people like that. And what I'm saying is that the first point, I mean, I'm saying if you say COVID caused X, you are in the category of thinking that says an event has a single cause. Bad. Bad policy comes from that. If you say, we will believe the thing that you are unable to disprove, if you cannot disprove me, I'm going to believe that you're correct. Bad policy approach. And those two things are running wild in the COVID situation. We do not have any idea right now of exactly what's going to happen next. And, they're telling us that all along. And you can see now new studies on the data coming in from the established side of this debate. From the establishment are that the data showing that this COVID thing's never going to go away. We're going to live with it forever. It's always there. And I note that, Merck dropped its two vaccines, clearly implying, and I think they actually said, we don't think a vaccine can be made for this situation. But the only point I'm making here is the way we think about these problems contributes significantly to the way that we respond to them, and we think unclearly and imprecisely, and so we have unclear and imprecise responses, and then we get these results that are all over the place that we can't fit into our preconceived notions.
Excellent information. I'm going to let you get on the road. Just phenomenal stuff.
I did the whole interview without driving.
There we go. Perfect. And
I think that's a very good point to make to people.
That
don't
is
do radio interviews and drive.
I agree. And the other part was new information. I think Merck has signed something to help Johnson & Johnson produce their vaccine.
That's to distribute the vaccine.
Oh, okay.
That's not the same as manufacturing the vaccine. They said we are going to switch all of our resources to manufacturing therapeutics that will help people who have the disease. Now that's a move in an interesting direction because the basic public policy that has to be here, whether there's vaccines or not vaccines, the basic public policy is we have to fundamentally improve the health of the individuals who are coming in contact with COVID-19. That underlying health has to be improved. If you get a vaccine and don't improve your underlying health, you're in deep trouble. If you get improve your underlying health and don't get a vaccine, you're in a lot less trouble than if you haven't improved your underlying health. So you want to that's where we need to go. Now, that's where Merck says they're going to go with their drugs. Now, we would argue that there are many ways to improve your underlying health beyond getting new drugs. That doesn't mean that the people that want to have new drugs and think they work for them and there's evidence for it and so on, they want to take new drugs, that's their business. But it should not be a situation where the thumb is on the scale for the drug approach and against everything else.
Well, so amazing information as usual. For those people that want to sign up for the newsletter, go to citizens.org, CITIZENS.ORG. And then you can sign up for the newsletter, and you can always pick up this radio show again if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. So it's Building Fortunes
Radio. And this is the March 12th program, right?
And it's March 12th, 2021. Yep, we said that at the beginning. So we said it at the beginning. We'll say it at the end. And for all those people, have a great weekend. And thank you, Jim, for actually leading by example by sitting in the driveway or wherever you are while you did this radio show instead of driving.
So
Appreciate that, too. All right, we'll catch you next time, everyone. Thank you. Bye for now.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, Peter. Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.